Come to the 64th annual OA birthday party. Together, we get better. In person, January 12th through 14th at the LAX Hilton in Los Angeles, California. Meet fellows from across the globe for a weekend-long extravaganza of workshops, panels, special interest speakers, entertainment, fellowship, laughs, and recovery. Highlights include body image workshop, weekend-long big book study, sober eating workshop, keynote speakers with unique stories, dance party and comedy show, yoga and meditation, meetings and meetups for LGBTQIA, BIPOC, Spanish language, young people, and AAPI members, plus a boutique where you can shop till you drop. Registration is now open at oabirthday.com. Staying the night? Book your room now at a discounted rate through the oabirthday.com website and act fast because rooms sell out quickly. There is a solution. You'll hear from speakers who have various versions of this disease who live happy, joyous, and free. Because together, we get better.
Welcome to the OA Virtual Kitchen Sink Meeting Podcast. Visit the Los Angeles Intergroup at oalaig.org for information on how to join our meeting live and how to donate to support this meeting and our podcasts. The opinions expressed on the Kitchen Sink podcast are those of the individual speakers and do not represent OA as a whole. And now, our speaker.
Hi, my name's Alex. I'm a compulsive overeater. Happy New Year, everyone. Thank you to Vincent for asking me to be of service today. As I frequently say in these situations, I need to be of service because my head is way up my own ass, and I just want to focus only on myself and everything that I am completely terrified about. And nothing pulls me out of there more effectively than being of service in some way and doing something that is about something greater than myself. I came to Overeaters Anonymous, now it's about 7.5 years ago. I was 49 years old. I'm 56 now. I've been abstinent if everything goes as it should go, as I hope it goes, by the end of next month, it'll be 6 years I'm abstinent. My abstinence is I eat three meals a day with only an occasional snack, and I refrain from a number of red light foods, including recreational sugar and flour. And I recently had to add chips of any kind to that because I was getting my ass kicked by those things too. I've spent my whole life I came to Overeaters Anonymous after having spent my whole life knowing that I had a problem or thinking that I had a problem with food. I believed that my problem was that I didn't know how to control my eating, that I was, my problem was certain foods and stuff like that. And it wasn't until I came to Overeaters Anonymous that I realized, or I was taught by all of you, that food was not my problem. Food was my solution to my problem. My problem is that I am scared. I'm scared about being alive. I don't know how to have feelings. I'm not certain how I'm supposed to handle feelings. I'm terrified of you and what you might think of me and how you might expose me as a fraud. I grew up a pretty anxious kid. I grew up in a household that was loving, but it was kind of explosive and unpredictable. And in that home, I kind of learned certain tactics, you know, to survive. Years ago, when I first went to the OA birthday party, and if there's anybody here who's not planning on going to the OA birthday party, reconsider it, because it's really just, if you're able, it's a really transformative experience to be there. And that's what was my experience anyway. And at one of these seminars, I heard a woman say that she didn't like to use the phrase character defects. She preferred the phrase survival traits. And I really relate to that because every single one of these defects, these things, procrastination or I have a lot of these kind of like dishonesty. And, you know, I can go down the line about all of them. They're all things that I developed at a young age to survive my situation. I couldn't be honest about who I was and what was going on with me for fear that I would be judged, that I would be ridiculed. And that sort of developed a pattern for my life that I was now going to put a lot of effort into creating a false face. I'm going to become a real hustler. I'm going to become a guy who's, I'm going to have a great joke and I'm going to have a great story and I'm going to make, you know, talk loud and draw a crowd. And I'm going to be really, no one would ever guess that I would be dealing with the fears and anxieties that I'm dealing with. And it works to a certain extent, but the need to keep that mask up, the need to keep this idea, this fake person, alive, is really intense. And I would turn, to the thing that brought me all this comfort when I was a kid, when I was afraid, and that's food. For me, particularly, it was, sugar and flour, but most especially the combination of sugar and flour. When those two things come together, that is where I go to what Bill W. refers to as oblivion in the Big Book. When I ate in that manner, when someone who shared earlier talked about hurting themselves with food, when I was hurting myself with food, when I was using food for something other than what it's designed to be used, I was seeking that oblivion. I was seeking to not feel, to completely numb myself out. Because I just can't take what it is to be alive. I didn't realize that's what I was doing before I came to Overeaters Anonymous. I just thought that I didn't have enough strength. I didn't have, you know, I didn't have the right diet. I didn't have the right exercise plan. I wasn't, you know, I was lazy. I was, you know, that would be my first attempt. My first thing to do is just beat the shit out of myself constantly about all of this, you know. I did it for a long time. If you're, you know, beating myself up never did anything but make me want to eat. Like calling myself fat never made me thin, you know. Calling myself stupid never made me smart, and yet I have done it so much. I would never dream of talking to another human being the way that I talk to myself. It's a first instinct. It's something that I have to work against. So I came to Overeaters Anonymous, and I walked into my room, that first room for the first time. It was, in Los Angeles, St. Thomas, the Apostle Church, which I'm glad to say meetings are back. And I walked into that room first time and I sat down. And I, you know, I crossed my legs and I crossed my arms and I was, you know, gonna try to just get through this. They say that the hardest thing to do in OA is walking in the room the first time. And that certainly was true. There was another thing that became very hard that I'll get to in a second, but I walked in that room and I listened to the talk and I did the thing that I have always done, which is I'm going to fake my way through this. I can talk, so I'll be able to share, you know. I'll share in a way that sounds honest, you know, is honest adjacent, you know, and, I hear people talking about abstinence. So I'll choose an abstinence, you know, that's for me. And I'm not going to get, you know, a sponsor, because that's just too involved and too scary. And then there's a lot of talk about God in this room. And I came into Overeaters Anonymous as a committed atheist. Absolutely. Not only committed, but I identified myself as someone who goes to reason rather than faith and does not, rejects that. And I'll talk about that in a little bit too. So I sat in those rooms for, you know, about a year. a little a year and a half maybe. And things did get better in some ways. I sat in the rooms and I shared and I took little service commitments and I took on my little bullshit abstinence, which was at that time, I thought my main problem was bread. So I just sort of like was going to abstain from bread, you know? And, but then I'd have like my lunch would be three Snickers bars and I'd consider that an abstinent lunch, you know? And, I went that way for a while. And then, I had a friend who, was my age and he was a really close friend and maybe my closest creative collaborator. And one night he went to sleep and he just didn't wake up. And, he was just gone. And my so-called abstinence just snapped like a twig. And, I turned immediately to what can I do to stop the onslaught of this fear that I'm feeling right now? The uncertainty of life that has just been presented to me. My inability to handle the feelings that are happening here. I turned to the food. The only thing that I did right was I kept coming back. And I went to this back to this meeting in St. Thomas and I shared what happened and my fear that I don't know what I'm doing, that everything I've been doing up until now is just talk, that every time I heard people say there's a, you know, we thought there was a softer but easier way and I couldn't find it. Well, I was faced with the idea that my softer, easier way did not work. That my idea was not going to work, that my usual smoke and mirrors was not going to work. And I shared about that. And a person at that meeting came up to me afterwards. And they said something that was of the beginning of the change for me in this program. She said, if you want to get better, if you want to feel better, go to a meeting. But if you want to get better, work the steps. And I was finally in a place of enough desperation that I could start to hear that. So I decided, well, I'm going to have to actually do this, which means I'm going to have to talk to somebody about being my sponsor. I said before that the scariest thing is to walk into the room, and that was scary. But the hardest thing for me was walking up to someone, you know, being a grown ass man, walking up to another grown ass man and saying, apple fritters have kicked my ass and I need your help. You know, I am powerless over sugar. I'm powerless over these things that I'm embarrassed to just say how powerless I am over these things. It's not, you know, we've heard it all before that this is not the sexy program where, you know, we have all these cool stories about our destruction with drugs or alcohol, that this is like the more embarrassing thing. And it is embarrassing for me. And as a man, just honestly coming up the way I did from the culture I came from, it's not, you know, I guess I was taught, I have the story in my head that a man's not supposed to care about what I look like. I'm not supposed to care about my waist size. I'm not supposed to have body obsession the way that I have it, you know? And, so I'm embarrassed about it. I think it says something about me that I don't want to share with anybody. It's one of the many things that I've learned in the program, that has taught me that, you know, showing your cards is the only play. That's the only play. It's surrender. Surrender is the only thing. So when I decided, okay, I'm going to have to talk to a sponsor, there was a guy that I had seen many times at another meeting, a meeting called Serenity Sunday in Los Angeles. And in my first meeting there, he came up to me and introduced himself because I identified as a newcomer. And he never kind of left my head, you know. So I said, I'm going to go to this meeting again. And if he's there, I'm going to go ask him to be my sponsor. And I went to the meeting and not only was he there, he was the lead speaker. And, after the meeting, I was I was shaking. I literally was shaking and trembling, but I walked up to him and I asked him, you know, would you, you know, in every kind of mitigating language of how to, instead of being able to directly say, you know, would you sponsor me? You know, I finally got to it. And that was the beginning of my recovery. When I put down, when I found the humility, enough humility to ask for help. When I found the willingness to say, I can't do this myself. I need someone else. That's when my recovery began, that moment. And I started working with him. And, which leads me to the next thing, which is that I was absolutely totally resisted at the idea of the God concept, that I was not going to be able to turn my life and my will over to the care of a God that I did not believe in. And so I tell him as we start the steps immediately, hey man, I don't know how I'm going to deal with this with step three, you know, because I don't believe in God and blah, 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 blah. And he says, relax. We're not even at step one yet. He says, let's just take it little by little, you know? And we did. And I started working the steps with him, and he was very gentle and very patient with me. And I started to see that, okay, well, the first thing is me. It's me accepting that I'm powerless. Okay, I can do that. Now, the second step is not me accepting some kind of God or becoming a religious person. It's simply taking the step where I say, I've come to believe that a power greater than myself can restore me to sanity. I've just come to believe that it's possible. Am I willing to do that? And it was really hard, but I was willing to get there, you know? And then we get to the third step and I just I hit the brakes with both feet. I absolutely was resistant. And again, he was patient. I wrote a want ad for God. He had me make a lot of lists about, like, what are you looking for in a higher power? What do you need? And I just had so much difficulty with it. And I turned to another guy in program who had also identified himself to me as being coming here as atheist. In fact, he said that I was atheist before OA, I'm atheist after, and my higher power is an atheist. And I said, hey man, I just don't know if I can, I don't know if I can believe that there's a power greater than myself. And he said, well, do you believe in gravity? Do you believe that gravity is a power greater than you? Because if you don't, I'd like to invite you to step off this building and see what happens, you know? And it's, I tell that story and it's always, it sounds stupider every time I tell it, but for me, it was so significant because of course, gravity is a power greater than myself. Of course, I don't have the power to control that. So what else do I not have the power to control? What else have I convinced myself that I'm in control of? And all that did was open the door of willingness this much, just enough for me to get in. And when I did that, I started to see how I can begin to turn over my iron grip on what I thought was my life. The more I go in this program, the more I realize that it's so not about the food. The first thing I have to do is put down the food because the food is just keeping me drunk and I'm not able to see these things. But when I'm able to do this work, I realize that the 5 minute, or is that time
yeah,
to
five? Yeah, 5 minutes.
Oh, I have Thanks, 5 minutes. Yeah. Okay, thank you. So I have this control that I am desperately holding on to in my life. So I can control you and what you think of me. I can control the outcomes of events. You know, all of this. It's not until this program, until it's doing the steps in this program, that I learned that I don't have any control. What I'm trying to hang on to so tightly is not my control of my life. It's the illusion that I have control. That's what I don't want to let go of. I want to hang on to this illusion, you know? There's a place that I go to in my head that I call the bunker. And when I step into the bunker, I can indulge myself in the belief that I'm in control. I can go back into the past and I can relitigate all of these battles I had. And this time I say all the right things and I do all the right things and I win, you know, or I have all these imaginary conflicts with people that I'm afraid of. And, or I sit in there and I, you know, throw celebratory parades to my greatness. You know, I just completely am inside my head. If I'm in the bunker, it's because I'm either in the past, which is about shame and regret most of the time, or I'm in the future, which is about fear and anxiety. The one place I am not when I'm in the bunker is in the present, which is ironically the only place I can actually experience my life. The bunker is a place where I am disappearing into myself, trying to, it's just me indulging in the illusion that I'm in control. I'm not of service to anyone in there. I'm certainly not in service to my higher power. As I said before, I came to this program as an atheist, and now I wear a bracelet that says, let go and let God. So fuck me. You know, I'm completely changed in that manner. I'm not in control. I'm not the master of the universe. The things that I'm so afraid of, they're all uncertain. They're just as uncertain as they were. And sometimes the feelings are really intense because I no longer numb those feelings with sugar and flour. But I have other tools available to me. And the Overeaters Anonymous program lays these tools out really well. There's 9 tools, if you look on the website, that are really useful, that I find extremely useful. I'll tell you though, if you look at those tools, that they're prayer, meditation, writing, meetings, sponsorship, telephone, these are all incredibly effective and powerful tools. But if you look at those 9 tools carefully, you'll see that thinking is not one of them. That worrying is not an effective tool when it comes to dealing with my life. It's a go-to thing for me. You know, I spent so much time worrying in my life that I think I convinced myself that it's an action, that I think that if I, okay, all right, time, it's, you know, it's, this thing is coming up. The new year is coming, which means that my vacation is going to be over and I'm going to have to go back into the breach of my life. So now I need to set aside from 4 o'clock to 7 o'clock to sit down and start worrying about it, you know? And somehow I think that that's going to be an action. It's not. You know what is an action? When I start my day with a morning practice, writing, I read literature from this program and other programs that I'm a part of. I pray. I meditate. I have an entire series of affirmations that are part of this program and others that I lay out, and I read. I do like an hour long whenever I sometimes I don't do it. Whenever I get away from it, like right now I'm in my vacation time, so I find lots of excuses to not do my morning practice. And lo and behold, all my anxieties are like, you know, up in my throat until I sit down and I find some action that I can really take. Like, for instance, writing, you know. So to wrap it all up, I just want to say that if you're new and you've heard this, or if you're not new and you're just struggling, I can just tell you what I was told by a long timer when I came to this program. They said, the war is over and you lost. It's time to surrender. And surrender is where our strength is. Our weakness that we all share, that's the strength that binds us together. Thanks for letting me share. All right, this is the time for questions only. There is no sharing at this meeting. If you need to share, please do so with any one of us after the meeting. Also, please remember that the opinions of the leader are my own and not those of Overeaters Anonymous as a whole. When asking questions, you need not identify yourself. If you asked a question last week, please wait until the first 3 questions have been asked before raising your hand. If you have a question, please click the raise hand icon.
Thanks, Alex. Wow, that was amazing. I have a sponsee who is just not connecting to step three, and I would love to hear a little bit more about how you came to believe. You know, I know you talked about gravity, and I would just love to hear a little bit more about that. You know, coming in, I know many people who come in thinking they know, and then when it's really time.
Sure.
So, thanks.
Sure. Thank you, Deb. Yeah. When I started doing all the work about a higher power, what really happened for me was I realized that I was hitting a lot of like these feelings of embarrassment. Like, how am I going to now say that I believe in God? Like how am I going to deal with this change in identity, you know? And I suddenly realized in writing and talking to my sponsor that what was really happening was I was hearing someone's voice in my head, like mocking me. I was thinking, whose voice is that? And I realized that it was the voice of my childhood friend who had been the guy who had kind of turned me on to the whole concept of atheism. You know, he's like a guy who's a really close friend. We went to high school together. I still talk to him 3 times a week. He's a really, really close friend. But I was afraid that if I said, hey, I'm doing this now, that he's just going to make fun of me mercilessly. I'm not going to be able to, you know. And I realized that what was going to have to happen was I was going to have to talk to him about it. And I called him and I said, I'm in recovery over, this was all a secret. I'm in recovery and it's over this. And part of my recovery has to do with accepting a higher power, and I haven't been able to do it because I'm afraid of what you're going to think of me. I'm afraid that you're going to, you know, make fun of me, everything. This is like, this guy has the most caustic wit. He is the most, you know, he could just slice and dice me, you know. And I told him this, and he said to me, my friend, I love you. And that's all he said, you know, and it kind of gave me permission to just do what I needed to do. And so maybe, you know, I find that, I don't know, maybe there's a block in some of your sponsees that is like the block that I experienced, that it's a story. I have so many stories in my head that I've told myself that I believe they're facts, but they're just stories that I told myself. And if I look at them, maybe it's different. I hope that helps. Cheryl?
Hi, Alex. I always enjoy your shares. Could you please speak to me about what you do on a daily basis to counteract? You call it fear. I call it terror. I wake up in terror every day. What do you do to counteract that terror? Thank you. Oh, one more thing. I didn't hear everything that's on your bracelet about God. What does your bracelet say about God?
Oh, I have 4 bracelets that I wear. One says acceptance. One says let go and let God. And one says be here now. And one says, what's my other one? I don't have one right now. Oh, gratitude. Of course, that's the last one I remember. It's to be grateful about anything. So the question was, how do I deal with that terror? Yeah, I am just like you. When I wake up, the first thing I'm thinking is, oh my God, they're coming to get me. They're going to find out. So the first thing that I do literally is, I'm just to be full disclosure, I don't do it every day. I'm trying to do it every day. And some days my brain convinces me that I can skip it and I always regret it. But if I sit down and I just start writing stream of consciousness, it's kind of like a drain of this. It almost sometimes feels like I'm purging the toxins, you know, like all of that. I let myself just say all the ugly things that are going on, instead of, it's like the repression of them is going to make them stronger. So if I let them out, That really helps me because as I see them on page, I realize how it's not as terrifying, you know? And then, you know, higher power starts to speak to me through this, writing process. I also do all of the prayers from on page 86 of the big book, which is literally, and the big part of it is saying like, consider my plans for the day. And I literally just go through, this is what my plans are for this day. And it's going to list a lot of things that are going to be terrifying to me. And when I sort of list them, and then I just realize that all I can do is show up and start. And the outcomes of all these things, I'm going to turn over to my higher power. That's really what turning over has come to mean in my life, is that I do the things that I can actually do. There are some things that I can actually do, but anything that I can't actually do, that I can't physically do, then that is not my job. That is the job of a power greater than myself. And usually it has to do with the outcome of something that is uncertain or what somebody is going to think of me. Those are the ones that I hope someday I will get to a place where I am not so ruled by that one. But I just, you know, I try to leave myself alone as much as I can, and I show up and start, and the results are not my responsibility. Years ago, I shared about all these fears in a meeting, and the person who was the lead chair of that meeting, she wrote a little note after I shared, and she passed it to me. And the note said, "I am enough. I have enough. I do enough. And done is perfect," because I shared about how I have such a my perfectionism is so debilitating that I get afraid to even start because if I can't do it perfectly, I don't want to even start. And those things, I'm enough, I have enough, I do enough, and done is perfect. It was on a little piece of paper. That same yellow paper is part of my morning practice. I pull it out, I read it. These are the tools I have to do. This is just, by the way, Cheryl, this is just to try to get to zero. This is try to just get to zero. To start the day so that I can, you know, begin at a normal place. I hope any of that I just said helps. Sean.
Thanks, Alex, for your amazing share. I really appreciate you, brother. And I wondered, you talked about the importance of this, doing the steps in your recovery. And I wonder if you could elaborate on that process or maybe go into a little more detail. Like, did you do it out of the OA workbook or out of the big book? And you could just talk a little bit more about that process. Thank you. Thanks again. I really appreciate you.
Thank you, Sean, and thanks for your question. Yeah, you know, I'm actually very interested in learning more about the OA workbook way of doing the steps. I've gone, my sponsor took me through the steps with the big book. His sponsor is a longtime AA guy, so it was all done strictly by the big book, and also using a guide Dr. Paul put together, who's the guy who wrote the acceptance story in the big book. So it's essentially just re through you know, just going through the first 164 pages and each step taking it through there. And there's a number of questions in this workbook that help a lot too. It's like an unofficial guide, so I don't know if it's approved by if it's OA approved, but that's the way I did it. And then we, you know, we did the fourth step, you know, making with the columns. I think the OA workbook does a series of questions, which is part of what fascinates me about it. I've been through the steps twice now in OA with my sponsor, and I'm in this going through steps in other programs. I'm not sure what else to say about it except that I went through it with through the big book. Thanks, Sean. Frank.
Thank you, Alex. Yeah, what an incredible share. I got so much out of it. Just lots of notes and thank you. So the question I tend to ask a lot is this idea of you call them survival traits. You know, what survival traits are you surprised have been removed since you've, you know, as you approach your 6-year mark? And which ones are you surprised that are still lingering?
The one that well, the most glaring one at the time was that I was a very heavy smoker, and I put that on my character defect list when I first did it. And as I was working through the steps, I realized that here's one that I don't know what to do about this, you know. And you know, I turned to another. They sent me to another program, and I went to that program, and that was lifted, you know. In everything else, everything on my list that were the most debilitating of my character defects, I would say that it has been nothing. Nothing has been so much outside, outright removed as grades of it has been removed. It's like my perfectionism, which was so difficult. It caused a lot of procrastination, and the procrastination caused anxiety. You know, it's been more about like being able to say that it's not as pronounced. You know, it's not as dominating of me as I was as it was before. My dishonesty. You know, I really. I'm, you know, my whole life has just been a liar and a cheat and a scammer, and now I am far more honest. But it's still, but there's still areas in which I struggle with honesty, you know. But what it tells me in the big book is that I identify my character defects, and then I humbly ask God to remove my shortcomings, and then the rest of it is God's job. You know, and I have to do it on God's time. You know, my image of higher power is for me, it's a river, and it's not a river that I'm standing on the banks looking into. It's a river. I'm inside the river. You know, I'm in it. It's flowing through me and past me and through everything around my life, all of you and everything. It's flowing, you know. And the river doesn't like love me, you know. The river doesn't have my back or specifically care how things turn out for me. The river just is. It is flowing in a certain direction. And when I let go and allow myself to be taken by this river where it leads, my life gets better. But when I do what I've done my whole life, which is try to control it, try to swim against the stream, I just get beat up and I get exhausted and I get depressed and I get frustrated. So for me, when it comes to the character defects, it's like, I'm just gonna let the river take it, and it's going to either get better or maybe it's gonna lead me to something else that I didn't expect. I'm just not in control. Is the thing. And if, and the more and more I'm able to let go of control or the illusion of control, the easier my life is. I hope that comes anywhere near answering that. Brian.
Thanks so much, Alex. Really, really appreciate your share. Frank's question always makes me think of something else. So I want to ask, what I've heard of being called character assets, the good qualities do you feel you've gained or strengthened as you've been recovering?
Oh. I think the thing that's been strengthened the most is the idea of I actually can be a useful person. You know, I don't have to, I the story that I tell myself that I'm a worthless person and that I need to con you into believing that I'm useful, that I have to create all this accomplishment and make all this noise so that you accept me, you know, but that I can actually be useful, that I can be of service. I think service is the concept that has changed me the most, you know, the idea that I can be, just being helpful to someone else can be a purpose in life. It's not just about trying to get something from someone. It doesn't have to be transactional, you know? Maybe I'm put here. Maybe one of the things that I'm supposed to be here to do is to help, you know, my fellow man, you know, that I think it was somebody, Ram Dass, I think, who said, you know, we're all just here to walk each other home. And, you know, maybe that's true. I've come to be open to the idea that maybe this, I don't have to do a piece of service like what I'm doing here in order to aggrandize myself or to gain, to get to another level, to get up another rung of the ladder. Maybe it's not that. Maybe it's just about, maybe I can help somebody, you know, maybe I can do something good, you know, that's just, helps me be, pack something into life instead of trying to always take from it. When I do that, suddenly the pressure starts to be relieved. I start, stop feeling like I got to keep tap dancing to keep everything working. You know, maybe I can just be useful and help and be of service, and that's enough, you know?
Hey, I am not camera ready, but hey, if there's a place I'm not going to be camera ready, this is it. So when you are wrong or you've done something not quite, say, in a recovered fashion, how do you put aside your ego so you can behave as someone who's in recovery and recognizes their play and what roles they play in whatever they've done?
Yeah. That's the hardest thing, right? It's like, I'll wrap it up really fast. It's just to say something I said earlier, somebody told me, which was this idea that that showing my cards is the only play. And I don't have control over what your response is going to be. If I did it wrong, I can't try to control how you're going to respond when I apologize. My job is to get a stain has appeared on my carpet and I need to clean the carpet. I need to clean that stain off. That's what needs to happen. Anything that happens on your side, is you have the dignity of to have that response. My job is to take care of my side and make sure that my thing is clean. That's the hardest thing, but ain't nothing to it but to do it.